On Monday, March 17th, millions of Americans will celebrate St. Patrick, a man who died more than 1,500 years ago. Probably a lot fewer will remember the date for a much more recent event, the end, 40 years ago, of the Arab oil embargo. The five-month embargo was slapped on the U.S. in retaliation for its support of Israel in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, and it was a kick in the teeth to a country that had grown to depend on cheap oil. It challenged America's car culture, the idea that we could go anywhere, anytime, at almost no cost. Before the embargo, it seemed only kooks and hippies drove efficient small cars. After the embargo, well, here's reporter John Miller.
Every summer when I was a kid, my family would hitch a tent trailer to our station wagon, turn on the radio, and just take off.
Bound for the mountains and the plains.
Sometimes we'd travel 10,000 miles around the country.
I loved it, and I felt darn good that I had a family that loved doing these things.
That's my dad, Mike Miller. Back in the 70s, he was a school teacher, and the big perk was the long summer vacation. The open road was freedom.
Yeah, it was freedom. Yeah. It was.
Going down that long, lonesome highway. Gonna live life my way.
My father was a Plymouth man. The one I remember best was a 1968 avocado green Fury Suburban.
Introducing the 68 Plymouth Fury, the car designed to win you over.
This was a big, boxy thing that looked to us very modern.
We made it look wider.
It was a boat. It got terrible mileage. But that didn't matter because gas was so cheap. Then, suddenly, it wasn't.
It's a crazy situation. I've never seen lines like I've seen these past days.
October 1973, UPI's Brian McFadden reported from New Jersey.
Almost half of the cars in the line that I was in ran out of gas before they reached the station, and we all had to pitch in and help push them to the pump.
With the squeeze in supply, prices spiked for gasoline and heating oil and electricity. President Richard Nixon urged us to take immediate measures to rein in our energy use.
These steps include reductions in home heating, reductions in driving speeds, elimination of unnecessary lighting. And the American people, all of you have responded to this challenge with that spirit of sacrifice which has made this such a great nation.
I'd just turned 13 and only barely remember all this. My dad's memory is much better than mine, but he barely remembers it either.
Isn't that interesting? I don't recall us limiting our activities or the distances we traveled.
Folks did reduce their driving.
Tony Dutzik studies driving trends for a think tank called the Frontier Group.
But it was a relatively small interruption in what had been before and continued to be a fairly steady run-up in the number of miles that people have driven.
The embargo was lifted, prices dropped, and we took to the road again. We may have had an inkling that oil was finite or that it was dominating our foreign policy or fouling our air, but we just kept driving.
History shows that people respond most significantly in terms of changing the way they consume energy when, for whatever reason, prices rise.
Jeffrey Ball is an energy researcher at Stanford. He says in Europe, which was also hit by the embargo, governments decided to jack up fuel taxes to keep consumption down. And it worked. Today, the French and Germans use about half as much oil per person as we Americans do. But in the United States, gas taxes are a much tougher sell.
There's a saying in energy circles that what Americans really want are hot showers and cold beer. When you start to ask them to live in a way in which their showers are cooler and their beer is warmer, that becomes a problem.
But a funny thing happened on the way to the future. People's behavior did start to change.
The period that we're in now is the longest sustained decline in driving since World War II.
The Frontier Group's Tony Dutzik says Americans have been driving fewer miles on average every year since 2005, right around when gas prices last shot up. Whether it's just about the money or environmental concerns or a broader cultural shift, more of us are turning to mass transit, car sharing, biking, and walking.
There's really no shortage of reasons for wanting to use less oil. And there's also no shortage of opportunities to do it.
That message resonates most with people born long after the crisis of 1973 and 74 had disappeared in the rearview mirror.
The Toyota Prius, the hybrid that powered a decade.
For those of us who can't quite break the habit, at least our cars are changing. The most enduring legacy of the oil embargo may be the fuel efficiency standards imposed on automakers in the wake of the crisis. Today, the average passenger vehicle in the U.S. gets almost twice the miles per gallon of the cars from when I was a kid.
Over the last 10 years, you've saved an estimated 650 million gallons of gasoline.
A few years ago, my father bought a hybrid. He says it's his favorite of all the cars he's owned. He especially likes to track his gas mileage when he hits the open road. For the world, I'm John Miller.